His divine grace, Papaya Chalanar Bhagavananda Goswami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Ananda Koti Vaishnav Vrindi Ki Jai, Namacharya Srila Kailas Thakur Ki Jai, Friends Say Gaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda Sidvaita Garadha Sivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrindi Ki Jai, Radha Krishna Govindanath Sayam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Yogalam Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Macharanam Kijai Jagannatha Swami Kijai Yamadamai Kijai Shimani Lasi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhokta Vrindi Kijai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bhok. All glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees. All glorious to the assembled devotees, all glorious to Shri Guru Gauranga, Prabhupada Ki Jai. Namam Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Krishnaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini, Namani Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Vacharani, Nivashesha Srinivadi Vashyacha Deja Tarni. So today, since today is a very, very special day in the Vaishnava calendar, it's the Gita Jayanti. And it's interesting, normally you do fast, the Ekadasi is usually the Gita Jayanti, the Mokshada Ekadasi. But tomorrow's the Ekadasi. Actually you have 2 days of Ekadasi. It's interesting, because the moon days are not always synchronized with the days of the month. You understand? Sometimes you'll have 2 days where it's Ekadasi, and you follow one day and not the other day, and because you're only supposed to follow the Shuddha Ekadasi, not the Ekadasi that's mixed. Anyway, it's a little complicated astrological type of thing. But in any case, this year, Mokshada Ekadasi is 2 days, and we follow the Ekadasi tomorrow, and today is Gita Jayanti, which is a very important day on the Vaishnava calendar. So, Om Ganativananda Shadganjana Shadakya Chachu Minitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, of course, the Bhagavad Gita itself is an elaborate philosophical treatise and a practical philosophical treatise. And at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, we have fighting. So, one may ask, what is the connection between philosophy and fighting? Because usually philosophers, they fight with their mouths, they don't fight with their hands. So, we're going to describe that, and then if we have time, I'm going to go into the elaboration of the events before Mahabharata War. So, anyway, and tonight we're going to speak more about that. There's a lot of information about this. So, Bhagavad Gita itself, just to give a summary, deals with different topics. And I'm going to summarize those different topics in three different ways: Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Sambandha basically means understanding the tattvas. And so the tattvas mentioned that tattvas, okay, let me explain tattva. It's going to be a little philosophical today. A tattva, the word tattva means that which is, that, tat. You know, just like in English you have the word that. So tattva. But it means more than just that, like that table or this table or whatever it is. It means something that is nasato vijate bhavo na bhavo vijate sataha ubiyorapi dushno antras. 20 os tattva darshvi. What it means, those things that are eternal categories. You know, there are temporary things in this world, like designations. We talked about this last night. Upadis, like Fiji is not a tattva. You understand? Because it's not eternal. It existed, it exists now, it didn't exist in the past, and it's not going to exist in the future. Right? Any country in this world, or even the Earth planet, too. Budwa, budwa, praliyate. The Bhagavad Gita describes there's a continuous creation, maintenance, then destruction. So even the Earth planet or the universe, you know, like every day of Lord Brahma's Hasra Yuga Paryantam, is 1,000 Divi Yugas together. And then after the day of Lord Brahma, there's a partial devastation, and the living entities, who are actually very spiritual, they go to the higher planets to get shelter. But anyway, so it's this world is temporary. We should understand Dukkalayama Shashwati, as described in the Bhagavad Gita. So the things we normally think are important are not tattvas. So the tattvas described in the Bhagavad Gita are, well, there's the jiva tattva, not me, which is us. Another one that's described, you know, living entities. Another one to describe is the Vishnu tattva, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, and his various Vishnu tattva expansions. Because these are eternal. In other words, the soul is eternal, Najayate Riyate Bhakadacha. And Krishna is eternal. And when it comes down to the earth planet, Ajopi son of Yatman Bhutanamit Ishvaro Pishan. He comes with his eternal spiritual body. Our body is not eternal. But the material energy is also a tattva. But it's endlessly, hope I'm not getting too philosophical, but it's endlessly mutable. It changes. For example, before the creation of the material world, the material energy was in the nations or dormant state, which is called the pradana. And then that material energy in the dormant state was glanced at by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when he glanced at the material energy, he implanted all the spirit souls. And also Lord Shiva is the glance of the Lord Shambhu. So, anyways, the material energy is the tattva, the living entities, us, we're tattvas. Supreme Lord is a tattva, Vishnu tattva, Jiva tattva, Maya Shakti, like that. And then you also have time. Time is a tattva too. And karma. And of course, sometimes the living entity has karma, and if he becomes Krishna conscious, he doesn't have karma. And anyway, the time factor is described as the all-pervading, destructive factor in this world. Like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna asks him, who are you? You know, the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And of course, it's Mrityu Sarva Horas Chaham. I'm all devouring death. And also, Kalo Asmi, I am time. So the Bhagavad Gita, this is called Sambandha Gyan. Sambandha Gyan means the relationship between these different tattvas. Does everybody understand that so far? The relationship. So the first few chapters of the Bhagavad Gita are basically Sambandha Gyan. And it's interesting, the Bhagavad Gita, the Acharyas actually define different chapters or different sections of chapters in the Bhagavad Gita as being more nectar or less nectar. And the reason for that, I'll give you, explain that. So the Bhagavad Gita has 18 chapters. So that's first six are basically, most of the first six are basically the Sambandha Gyan. Of course, there is some other Abhideya Prayojan, which we'll describe in a second. But the middle six chapters are described by the Acharyas as the nectar of the Bhagavad Gita. When I was first joined the movement, why is it described? Because the Supreme Lord is being described in really depth in the middle six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. I mean, it's really, of course, it's all nectar. But when I first joined the movement, the Bhagavad Gita was described to me like a sandwich. Or there was a type of cookie called an Oreo cookie. I don't know if anyone knows what it is. You have them here?
Yeah.
Where you have the cream filling in the middle? Really? You have them here in Fiji? So it's the cream filling. I don't eat them. It's not prasadam. So you have the cream filling in the middle, and that's the real nectar. Of course, the outside is okay, too. Or an ice cream sandwich or something like that. So in the middle six chapter you find a lot about Krishna that's being described, and of course devotional service and like that. So a lot of that is Abhideya means understand. First of all, you understand the tattvas, and Abhideya means how to reach spiritual perfection once you've understood. The tattva is the practice of spiritual perfection. And of course, generally we know that is what sadhana bhakti. So that is elaborated in the Bhagavad Gita, continually in the Bhagavad Gita, not only in the middle six chapters. I mean, even at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, you have, sarvadharma, pritya, jayam, namikam, and also manmana, bhavaman, bhakto, etc. You should always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, etc. So that's Abhideya, and then you also have Prayojana. Prayojana means the goal, pure love of Krishna, which is described very briefly in the Bhagavad Gita, not elaborately. Mostly it's Sambandha and Abhideya, the process and what is the truth or the relationship between the different tattvas. So that's basically Bhagavad Gita. And it's interesting, if you do an analysis, which I have done, of the Bhagavad Gita, and I've done a count of how many verses deal with each particular subject matter, you'll find that that there's more verses dealing with the material energy than you'll find dealing with the spiritual world. I wouldn't say the majority of verses, but there's more verses dealing with material energy than dealing with any other subject matter. Now, why is that? That's interesting. It's because most of us are entangled in the material energy, and we need to know how to get out. And we need to be able to identify the different aspects of Maya. For example, there's so much information in the Bhagavad Gita that deals with the three modes of nature. Yeah, you may think, what's the nectar about the three modes of nature? Well, the point is that we're all in the three modes of nature. And the first thing a devotee has to understand is a satsanga tyag, a Vaishnava char. That is, how to give up the association of the modes of nature. And the way you can give up the association of the modes of nature is, first of all, you got to be able to identify it. Just like we're in the midst of a pandemic. So there's different tests they use, like Bas Bihari is here, he's expert. He gives people tests all the time. He gave me a test, and I came out negative. It's the only type of test you want to have a negative on. If you go to the university, you want to get an A. But in a coronavirus test, you don't want to get an A. So just like you have a test to see if someone has the virus. It's interesting, isn't it? So in the same way, we have to test to see if it's the modes of nature. You know, it's not that you have to swab your nostril. And so therefore, Krishna in the Gita describes food and the different modes of nature. You know, like food in the mode of goodness gives you health, increases the bodily strength, and gives you, it says fatty, but not fatty in the sense that makes you really fat, but gives you energy and creates different aspects of the body, helps you create different aspects of the body. And then food in the mode of passion is spicy, too hot, like you all like, you know, chilies, right? Hot chili peppers, anyway. So food in the mode of passion, like that. And food in the mode of ignorance, this food is a tasteless, stale, decomposed, and it's like meat, of course, kava, stuff like that. It's all food or things in the mode of ignorance. So you have to identify these foods. You have to identify people in different modes. For example, people in the mode of goodness, they're actually very determined as to self-realization. People in the mode of passion are very determined as to making money, right? And people in the mode of ignorance, their determination never goes beyond dreaming. It's just like procrastination. I'll do it tomorrow, don't worry. I will do my homework tomorrow. And actually, it's interesting that the mobile phone puts you in these different modes, you know, just like you look and say, oh, let me look at this, let me look at that, let me look at Twitter, whatever. And you just fall into the mode of ignorance because you never accomplish anything. The whole day goes by and you're just checking out everybody's feed on the mobile phone. So anyway, so it's funny. So you have to be able to say, this is ignorance, this is passion, this is goodness, and this is transcendental. Because actually, just in material goodness, one is looking for what? Liberation. This is also from the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Lord Kapiladev describes devotional service in different modes of nature. He said, devotional service in the mode of goodness is one is looking for liberation. And transcendental devotional service is when one's mind becomes attracted to the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of God, just like the Ganges River or the rivers flow to the ocean. So one has to be able to identify these modes of nature. It's really important. And not only Krishna also talks about identification of the modes of nature to determine what sort of duty you should do. Right? Chatravarna Mayashrishtam Gunakarma Vibhagasha. He describes the Varnashram system. Why has he described the Varnashram system? Well, because Arjuna is a Kshatriya. And Arjuna is going to be forced to fight anyway, even if he doesn't follow Krishna's directions, he's going to fight in the wrong way. And that was proven earlier in the Mahabharata. We have this interesting story about Arjuna's psychophysical nature, his Varnashram situation as a Kshatriya. Earlier in the Mahabharata, you have this story about Arjuna, who is performing austerities in order to get the weapons from the demigods, especially from Lord Shiva. And so as he's performing austerities, he's sort of acting like a Brahmin, you know, chanting, actually standing on one leg, chanting Om Namo Shivaya, 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 Shivaya Namaha. So here's a Vaishnava worshipping Lord Shiva. That's actually an interesting question. Should a Vaishnava worship Lord Shiva? What do you think? What's your feeling? Yes, it depends what he's asking for. If he's asking, like this Rikha Asura, for the benediction of touching anyone's head and killing them, that's not a good way to worship. Or if you're approaching Lord Shiva for money or for good wife or something like that. Or if you're approaching Durga for a good husband, like the gopis. For the gopis, it's good. So if you're doing it for Krishna, it's all right. So if you're approaching Lord Shiva as a Vaishnava, and you're approaching him for service to Krishna, because Lord Shiva is a great Vaishnava. This is a very important point, too. Because sometimes immature devotees say, don't worship Lord Shiva at all. But we respect Lord Shiva. Actually, one of the offenses on chanting, as described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is to offend the demigods. So we don't want to consider their names to be equal to or independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu. But at the same time, we don't want to offend them. Because they're devotees, especially Lord Shiva is a great pure devotee. In fact, if you look ontologically, sorry for the big word, but if you look at, God, excuse me if I use big words. So if you look at Lord Shiva's position, the original Lord Shiva in the spiritual world is called Sada Shiva, and he's Vishnu Tattva. The Shiva in this world is not Vishnu Tattva, he's like the milk that has been transformed into yogurt, which is different. But interesting, that's why you find injunctions in the many Puranas that you should worship Lord Shiva, because that's the Lord, Sada Shiva. For example, Advaitacharya is Sada Shiva, and also Mahavishnu. So devotees often ask that question, how can he be Shiva and Vishnu? Well, Sada Shiva is actually the personality from whom Lord Shiva expands, the Lord Shiva in this world expands. Anyway, getting back to the story. So Arjuna, he was worshipping Lord Shiva to get the Pashupatra, you know, the weapon. And he was standing on one leg, chanting Om Namo Shivaya, acting like a good Brahmin, but was a Brahmin. And then when he was doing that, this big boar, that means a pig with tusks, went to attack him. And naturally, Arjuna's not going to just sit there and allow himself to be eaten by the boar. Do you have boars here? Oh, you do. Not dangerous ones, no. They're just little pigs. So he takes out his bow and arrows, and he shoots the boar. Boom! And the boar dies, and then he goes to the boar and he sees two arrows in the boar. Not only his arrow, but someone else's arrow. And then, what happens? Then this Karata hunter, that means the lower class hunter, comes up, and the hunter says, yeah, my arrow killed the boar. And Arjuna says, no, my arrow killed the boar. And the hunter says, no, my arrow killed the boar. And Arjuna is getting angrier and angrier and angrier. Because, this is the point I'm making in Bhagavad Gita, because of his nature. Everybody has their own psychophysical nature, you know, Varnashram. You're Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. And therefore, Krishna in the Gita talks about the qualities, right? What are the qualities of Brahman? Samabhava, Paksha, Chama, Shanti, Raja, Deva, Chadi, Vyakam, Astikyam, Brahma, Kama, Svabhajam. So, those who take second initiation should understand that's the quality. No politics. It's the opposite of... It's interesting, it's actually the opposite of politics. So, this thought just came to my mind. Isn't it? Practically all these different aspects of qualities of a Brahman are opposite of politics. Sama, he's equal poised. Happiness, distress, someone criticizes me, someone loves me. Isn't it? I mean, just like last night, you know, everybody was bathing my feet or whatever. They all love me. Anyway, so if I get bewildered and think, yeah, then that's not sama, that's not equal poised. how does one become equal poised? One becomes equal poised by simply thinking of Krishna's pleasure and the pleasure of the Guru. See, we have the perfect method for achieving brahminical qualities, right? Sama. I just think, what would please Prabhupada? Okay. I have to do this because it'll please Prabhupada. And that's a Brahmin. One thinks like pleasing the Guru, one gets automatically all the brahminical qualities. Sama, Dhamma, and of course Dhamma means sense control. Or as Prabhupada one time translated this verse, he said, tame, T-A-M-E, you know, taming animals. You tame an animal. It's interesting. When I was young, we would go to these aquariums where they would tame seals and porpoises by giving them some fish, you know. They behave themselves like good fish. So anyway, so we don't tame devotees like that by giving them some prasadam. So, okay, chant, here's some prasadam. Anyway, so it's kind of interesting, isn't it? We tame people. So, samadhamma, sense control. That means tame your senses, control your senses. Tapa, austerity, accepting everything favorable, except rejecting everything unfavorable. Shanti Rajivamaya Vachad, tolerance, religiosity, jnana vijnanam, regularly studying and applying what you're reading about or studying or hearing about in class. So that's a Brahmin. That's really what a Brahmin is. Not caste or anything like that. It's someone who has those qualities, just like that story of the in the Vedas about Satchakama. Satchakama was considered a Brahmin even though it was not known who his father was. You know, Gautama Rishi asked, who's your father? He went to his mother. His mother said, I don't know. Could have been him. Any one of 100 people. So, and then he goes back to his guru and says, what? My mother doesn't know, I don't know, and the guru said, you're a Brahmin. Someone tells the truth. So that's a Brahmin. And of course, the qualities of a Kshatriya, heroism, determination, battle, like that, right? The qualities of a Kshatriya. And someone who does not like to get defeated or challenged or considered to be Lagavam, that's a person, Bhagavad Gita, like lesser or weaker. Like if you tell a Kshatriya, you know, just like in the Mahabharata, when Yudhisthira Maharaj was challenged to the gambling match, he couldn't say no. It's again Kshatriya Dharma. And, you know, there's other things, but we don't apply them in Kali Yuga, that a Kshatriya is approached by a proper woman, he has to accept her as his wife. Anyway, but that is not applicable in Kali Yuga. So then, so Kshatriya Dharma. And that's why Arjuna was upset that when his he was being questioned whether or not he could actually kill that boar. And then Avaisha, Krishna Goda, Akshivani, Avaisha Karma, Svabhavajam. And then so Avaisha is interested in making money and commerce, cow protection, Godaksha. And then Shudra is interested in service to others. And so that each and every one of the persons in the Varnashram system is influenced by different modes of nature. That's why I'm talking about that. Like a Brahmin in the mode of goodness, a Kshatriya in the mode of passion, Vaishya in the mode of mixed modes of passion and ignorance, and a Shudra in the mode of ignorance. So you can actually see who you are. So Arjuna, getting back to the point, because this is the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was challenged by this Kirata, this lower class man, you know, here, at least for his vision or opinion, this person was lower class. You know, the hunter. You know, in the village. you know, what did they call it? Adivas, right? Adivas, the original people. Adivas, that's what I said. Adivas, original people. So, you know, you can imagine. I mean, it would be like if I went into the villages here and someone said, I know the Bhagavatam more than you. Someone, one of the villages, his own chief, said, oh, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And he knew more verses than me. Of course, I wouldn't think like that. I would be happy. Isn't it? I'd be happy if you went into a village and found some chief quoting the Bhagavatam. So Arjuna, that's why Arjuna was upset. You know, here's this Adivas, and he's just claiming that he killed this boar. Now, if Arjuna was a Brahmin, Arjuna would have said, who cares who killed the boar, right? That's a Brahmin. Brahman is not interested in position, prestige, fame, or anything like that. A Brahman says, who cares? You killed, I killed. Please accept my obeisances. Oh, glory to Prabhupada. You know. But Arjuna said, no. And he got really angry. This is Kshatriya nature. He got really angry, and he challenged this Kirata to a fight. And they were having to fight back and forth, back and forth. And Arjuna was losing. Finally, Arjuna was on the ground, and he was thinking, what's happening? And he started to worship Lord Shiva in his mind, maybe even made a little Shivalinga on the ground. And he offered, this is an interesting story from the Mahabharata, he offered a garland to the Shivalinga, and then he looked up, and this Kurata had the garland on. And then he understood it was Lord Shiva. And then of course, he got the benedictions, the weapons, and everything like that that he had wanted, and got it, was able to go to the heavenly planets. So the point I'm making is this is one of the main lessons Krishna's teaching in the Bhagavad Gita, that everyone has his own nature and everyone should serve Krishna according to his nature in the Varnashram system, you know, whether it's Kshatriya, Vaishya, Brahman, or Shudra. And so ultimately, Krishna is preaching to Arjuna in this way that you should fight because that is your nature, and if you don't follow my directions, fight for me, you're going to be fighting, you know, you're going to fight anyway. And then Arjuna ultimately surrenders. Now, an interesting thing about the Bhagavad Gita is Arjuna's surrender is voluntary. Krishna in no way in Bhagavad Gita threatens Arjuna. Just like you sometimes see in certain religions, there's a threat that unless you, worship, anyway, unless you worship, you go to hell, right? I'm not going to mention the name of the religion, please. You go to hell forever, right? That's a pretty interesting thing because if God was there and he would send someone to hell forever because someone made a theological mistake, that sort of God I am not going to worship. Isn't it? It's like going to the, if you go to the university, and you fail your course, and therefore you have to go to hell forever. Think about the way that God is pictured. Can't you think about it? The way that God is pictured in certain religions, angry, jealous, vengeful. I remember reading one religious tract, it was a little piece of paper they give out, and someone just didn't surrender or whatever in one lifetime, and he's drowning in this ocean of fire, this person. And God is above him and saying, ha ha, you blew it. You didn't do it in this one lifetime. You're going to stay there forever. That's pretty bad. I mean, what kind of God is that? God is supposed to be merciful, loving. You know, he gives us one chance after another, lifetime after lifetime. Abhonam jamanam ante jambam vajate. Vasudeva Saramiti Samahapan Sadurlava. Many after many, many, many lifetimes. It's not just one chance. You get one chance, and that's it. Heaven or hell, one chance. So getting back to the Gita, is that Arjuna is actually given a choice. Krishna doesn't say to him, you surrender to me or else I'm going to send you to hell, Arjuna. He says, now that you've heard this philosophy, the last part of the Bhagavad Gita, what do you want to do? What are you going to do? And he leaves it up to Arjuna. So that's really interesting how Krishna facilitates Arjuna's Krishna consciousness. He doesn't force it down his throat. The Bhagavad Gita, he brings Arjuna gradually up. Of course, there are some shocking moments, like in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna sees the universal form. That's quite shocking. I mean, that's really an interesting experience where you see everybody rushing into the mouths of Krishna. Like moths rushing into a flame, isn't it? Can you imagine that? I mean, if I ever saw the universal form, I would surrender to Krishna. Can you imagine? I mean, it's unbelievable. It's like practically the most terrifying experience you've ever had in your life. You see all the soldiers rushing in. You can picture it. You're rushing into the mouths of the universal form. You know, Dronacharya, Kripacharya. Oh, no, Kripacharya didn't die in the battle. But Dronacharya, Grandfather Bhishma, and others just rushing into the mouths of the universal form. But anyway, but Krishna is really giving Arjuna a complete 360 degree, as in French they would say, tour de force. I mean, a complete understanding of everything. And then Krishna says, what do you want to do? And then Arjuna agrees to fight at the end. So it's all voluntary. So we have to understand that also in presenting the philosophy of Krishna consciousness to others. It's all voluntary. You can't just shove it down someone's throat. You have to patiently. Of course, Arjuna heard the Bhagavad Gita 35 minutes, 40 minutes, he understood the whole thing. For us, 35, 40 lifetimes. We may understand the Bhagavad Gita, right? If we're lucky. But the Bhagavad Gita is meant to be taken literally. We should study the Bhagavad Gita. It's not that we're so advanced that we know more than the Bhagavad Gita. I mean, I try to read the Bhagavad Gita every day. To me, it's a great source of inspiration. And it's meant to be taken literally. Not figuratively, just like there's an interesting verse in Bhagavad Gita. Ananyas chintayon tamam yejana paribhasate tishav nijibiyut tamam yogashema ahamiyam. So that verse states that for those who are devoted to me without any other objective, ananyas chintayon tamam, that's really interesting. It doesn't mean someone who's just a devotee. You know, I got the question, someone raised the question 2 days ago, are devotees free from the modes of nature? And I said, that means that determines, I mean, depends on how you define devotee. If devotee is just someone who wears a dhoti, no. But a devotee is someone who is ananyas chintayon tamam, one who is completely without any other focus in life. That's a devotee. So how many of us can actually say that we're devotees? We can say we're aspiring devotees, we want to be devotees. But to be a devotee means to be devoted from the heart, not just the mind, but from the heart, you know, to really just want to give Krishna pleasure. That's ananyas chintayon tamam. So anyway, I'm going to talk about that verse a little bit. I'm describing how you have to take the Bhagavad Gita literally. So there was once upon a time, there was a Brahmin, and he was reading this particular verse in Bhagavad Gita. And where Krishna says, for those who believe the devotee and worship me with love, who have no other focus other than me, I carry what they lack, and I preserve what they have. And this particular devotee, he thought, well, Krishna doesn't do it directly with the devotees. He has his internal energy do it. And so he thought, you know, let me scratch out this mom business. You know the story, right? You scratch out where Krishna says mom. You know, so many places in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna uses the pronoun mom, me. And the impersonalists, they just want to take the mom out of the Bhagavad Gita. Mammano, mabamad, bhagavad, bhakto. Krishna says, just think of me, become my devotee, worship me, 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 me. And the impersonalist says, no, Krishna doesn't mean him. Just like if I say to you, bring me some water, bring me some prasadam, bring me a mala, and you say, he doesn't mean himself. You give it to someone else. Or you give it to the impersonal whatever, guru. You give it to the guru tattva. Sometimes people say, guru is one. So, the guru is one. There was true, I mean, the guru is one representing Krishna. But there are different personalities too. That's my about philosophy. So anyway, so this particular individual, he scratched out the word mom in that verse. He thought, you know, Krishna doesn't do it directly. He just, you know, it's through Shakti. So then he goes to take his bath. And then while takes his bath, someone shows up at his door of his hut, and his wife receives the person, and this person's a little boy, and he's all scratched up. And this Brahmin's wife says to the little boy, why are you scratched up? Who did this to you? I mean, who caused you to bleed? And then the little boy said, your husband did it. And that little boy, of course, was Krishna. And then when the husband heard the story later on, he understood it's Krishna directly who does this. So that's the point of the Bhagavad Gita. It's meant to be taken directly as Krishna's words, direct understanding. And so we can derive great satisfaction and bliss by regularly hearing the Bhagavad Gita and studying the Bhagavad Gita. Very, very important. Actually, I was going to speak about the events preceding the Bhagavad Gita being spoken, but I don't have time this morning. But so that, anyway, so that's the Bhagavad Gita. Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana, mainly Sambandha and Abhideya, that is talking about the tattvas, and Abhideya, the process of devotional service, thinking of Krishna, surrendering to Krishna, controlling your senses, and then a little bit of Prayojana, Matadvasyate, Suryo, Nashashanko, Napalaka, Yadgadwa, Nandagartamte, Taddhama, Paramamama. A little bit is a hint of Prayojana there. In other words, that verse I just quoted says, that abode of mine is not illuminated by the sun or electricity or anything like that. Everything is self-effulgent. And then there's a little bit of a hint of Prayojana in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where the material world is described as an upside-down banyan tree with its branches down and its roots up. So a little bit of understanding there that we're here because this is a reflection of the spiritual realm. Just like I was listening to a class of Prabhupada this morning where Prabhupada, I listen to Prabhupada every morning, where Prabhupada was describing that the topmost thing in the spiritual world is what? Does anyone know? What relationship? Nobody knows. Nobody's listening. So what's the topmost relationship in the spiritual world, Bhagavad Gita? What? Madhuri Leela, the Krishna and the Gopis. And so that's reflected in the boyfriend-girlfriend relationship in this world. And then, of course, Krishna also has his marriages, too, you know, 16,108 marriages. And that's reflected. So the Bhagavad Gita, that's a little bit of a hint of Prayojana. Not much of Prayojana there in Bhagavad Gita. But if one reads very carefully and understands the philosophy, you can find Prayojana in the Bhagavad Gita. Especially in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there's a lot of Prayojana. So that's Bhagavad Gita in a nutshell. I mean, I could speak a lot more about Bhagavad Gita. So anyone else have any questions? Anybody have any questions? No? I mean, yes. What? Yeah, Guru Tapa is also there. That's one thing I forgot. Oh, yeah, I was going to mention that. So, the paraphernalia of the Lord and the Guru should be kept separate. That's true. I was asked to mention that. Yeah, Guru Tattva was mentioned there. Tadvini Panipatena Pariprasnena Sevya. One should learn the truth by approaching the Guru. And also the cyclic succession is mentioned. I mean, there's so many topics that I left out this morning. Ivam Param Gra Praptam Ivam Rajashayo. We talked about that last night. How the one should receive knowledge in the cyclic succession. The Guru Tattva, the Guru is not Krishna. The Guru is actually representative of Krishna. And he's respected, Sakshadani Prena Samastha Shastra. He's respected as a representative of Krishna, but he's not Krishna, so any paraphernalia you use for worshipping Krishna should not be used to worship the Guru. It should be just Krishna's there, Guru is Guru Tattva. That's interesting, Guru Tattva. He's also generally Jiva Tattva. Generally, the Guru is Jiva Tattva, although there are some instances, like the residents of Vrindavan, Krishna is directly their Guru. So he's Vishnu Tattva in their case. And for Arjuna, the Guru was Vishnu Tattva. So that's all right. Yes? Yes. Okay, all right, that's a bit subject matter. Srila Prabhupada is the founder of Acharya of ISKCON. He is the ultimate source of siksha, the standard by which everybody else is measured, and everybody is meant to serve Srila Prabhupada's mission. Anybody who's a bona fide guru in ISKCON, I'm not talking about people outside of ISKCON, that's a different subject matter, but anybody who's a bona fide guru in ISKCON will encourage the disciples to serve Srila Prabhupada's mission, because this is Prabhupada's temple, and Prabhupada's movement, and that's what will keep us together. You know, we may have different spiritual masters, but Prabhupada indicated that what would please him is if we all cooperate together, regardless of who our initiating guru is, and Prabhupada is ultimately the siksha guru of everybody. And siksha guru is actually more important than diksha guru, which is interesting. That's of course you also get siksha from diksha guru, but the siksha guru, Prabhupada, is actually should be the center of everyone's life, and that will keep our movement together. Otherwise, we'll divide into different factions. So everybody is meant to serve. Like I tell my disciples at the time of initiation, you're meant to serve Prabhupada's mission. Not my mission. I don't have a separate mission. My whole life is dedicated to Prabhupada. Whenever I do anything, I ask myself, what would Prabhupada want? So my life is dedicated to service to Prabhupada. And that's why I'm here. So I'm here in Fiji. And that's why Tamal Krishnamurti has asked me to come here. Because as you know, he was very careful as to who he would allow to come here. And I think I was the first one he allowed to initiate, other than himself, here in Fiji. And so he examined me with a microscope. It's true, actually he did. He examined me. And we have a very friendly relationship. I mean, as everybody knows, I tell jokes. So, he appreciated that. I used to tell him, when I called him up on the phone, and devotees know this, I used to say, can I speak to the Supreme Controller? Yeah. And he would say, can I speak to the Supreme Controller number two? So, this is Vaishnava relationships. So based on those relationships, we should have these trusting relationships. And he was so focused on when he was a pastor, focused on Prabhupada. I mean, that's perhaps the thing I appreciated most of all my interactions, that he was willing to do anything to please Prabhupada. I mean, he was just like, if anyone was a Prabhupada man, He is. So we should be like that too. You know, that's his example, and I'm trying to set that example too. You know, he would listen also every day. He would listen to a class of Prabhupada. Even when he was going to the university, he would actually put on a class, and I do that every day too. So we should listen to Prabhupada regularly. For some of you, it may be difficult to understand his accent, because it's different than the Fiji accent. But it's after a while you can understand. It's actually very purifying. Extremely purifying, not just ati purifying. Right? Ati means extreme. So, so Prabhupada's mission should be our focus. And of course, we have relationships with our guru. Yes, that should be loving relationship. Relationships with other Vaishnavas. If we don't love the other Vaishnavas, we're displeasing Prabhupada. If we criticize the other Vaishnavas, we're displeasing Prabhupada. We should appreciate everyone's bhakti. It's not, you know, just like... Hanuman was criticizing the spider, right? It's a famous story, the spider. You all know the story since you're all Ram Bhaktas. The spider was trying to help build a bridge to Lanka. And Hanuman said, "Get out of my way, you little creep," whatever he said. "You little spider, what are you doing? You're just a puny little spider. You know, we're trying to do some service for Lord Ram here. Important service, and you're just in the way." Right? He said, "You're just in the way. Get out of the way, you creep." The spiders. So, and Guru Ram said, "Be quiet." Hanuman, how do you say, Mona, something like that. Quiet. Chupiro. Chup. Chup. He said, "Chup." Hanuman. "He's doing as much service as you. You leave him alone." Right? And so there's a spider. So that means, I mean, what can we learn from that? You know, you all know the story, but we can learn that we should appreciate every devotee's devotion. Every devotee's, you know, whatever little bit they do. Even that story about the rat that was on the altar. You know the story? There was a rat. Not here. We don't have rats here. You know, do we? We do have rats. We have mongooses. So there was a rat that was on the altar. And the light went out, and somehow or other the rat was able to put the light back on with his tail or something. He went. And the rat died, and the rat went back to Godhead. And then there's this story about... was it Radhakunda, Shivakari? You know the story? There was a jackal who was being tortured by some kids, and they were lighting fire at his cave or something like that. And then Radharani sent some of her associates and saved the jackal and took the jackal back to Godhead. So Krishna's, hey Krishna Kanana Sindhu. So Krishna is an ocean of mercy, and we just want to. We want to be so critical of Vaishnavas. You know, Krishna's an ocean of mercy. What? Yes.
For example, there was a Mataji who went and climbed on Prabhupada's asana and was getting the photo.
Yeah.
And Srila Prabhupada came in, and then she immediately started, she was startled, and she was trying to sense Prabhupada and really slowly I climbed on your asana.
Of course, that's in reference to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was at Jagannath Puri and he would stand by the Garuda Stamba to see Lord Jagannath, an old lady climbed up on his shoulders. And Govinda, Lord Chaitanya's servant, said, "Get down! You don't know what you're doing, you're standing on God's shoulders!" And then Lord Chaitanya chastised his servant. He said, "You adivas," there's that word again, adivas, "you primitive person, You know, she has so much devotion for Krishna. You know, so Lord Chaitanya was appreciating that devotion. So we should be like that with the Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis. Whatever devotion they have, you know, it's nice. So pride is not one of the qualities of a Vaishnava. Amanina manadena, right? Okay, so a lot of people came this morning. It's interesting. Was it because of Gita Jayanti? Or because of the prasadam later on, is it? Okay, I guess we have to do the Guru Puja now, right? Darshan and then Guru Puja, okay. Jai, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.